Welcome to Profiles in Risk, the INS Nerds podcast, the only recurring podcast dedicated to insurance careers, insurtech startups, and insurance current events. We are your hosts, Carly Burnham, Tony Cañas, and Nick Lamparelli. You can find all of our podcasts, show notes, and other great insurance-related content at insnerds.com. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to episode 10 of Profiles in Risk, the INS Nerds podcast. My name is Nick Lamparelli. Today, my co-hosts are the usual Tony Cañas, and playing Lou Gehrig is Sean Mooney. Sean is a founder and president of Mooney Insurance Brokerage. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
I'm just outside on the suburbs of Philadelphia, and coincidentally today, since Sean's on the show, our theme is going to be on the agency system and the brokerage system and how agents and brokers can survive and thrive in today's world. So, Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Happy to be here.
So, Sean, to get started, what do you do? What are you? Who is Sean Mooney?
Sean Mooney, independent agency owner. Brokerage president.
Did I surprise you with that question?
Are you an agent or a broker? Yeah, so the best way to describe it in the two versions of the agency channel is a captive agent. And a captive agent would be those who represent one exclusive company. So that would be the captive model. I am the independent agency distribution channel, which is a little different because we represent multiple companies and therefore, you know, have contracts with, you know, multiple companies that we represent. So those are the two channels when referencing agencies that are, you know, most common.
So an agent represents one company specifically, say Nationwide or State Farm or nobody else, and a broker represents multiples. So wouldn't that mean that an agency by default means exclusive? How come we still use the word agency even for people who are really brokers?
I don't know why it's defined that way. Because it's probably more in the line of being a retail agent. So there's the wholesale agencies, and those are, you know, general agencies, brokerages, you know, on the wholesale side. And then on the retail side being, you know, the direct to consumer is the ones that, you know, we deal with. So.
Okay. I've always wondered, I've 8 years in the industry, I've never been an agent. So I've always kind of wondered the differences. And I know when I started at Nationwide in claims, I did claims both for Allied, which is the independent line, and Nationwide, which is the exclusive line. And they never really explained it to me. It was years later before I figured out what the difference was between one and the other. So I think it's common in the industry for those of us that are not agents to really not understand that.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a well-defined to consumers either, because we get that a lot. Like what are you? And the best way that I try to describe it is, you know, an independent agent such as myself is like the Trivago of, you know, insurance, where instead of, you know, trying to book a vacation or a hotel or something like that with, you know, XYZ travel agency, you know, we have multiple options, multiple different companies that we go out, source your information to, and, you know, gather pricing and really find some value for our customers.
Hold on, Sean, you look about 16 years old. So I do have to wonder, if you even know what a travel agent is, because like I'm 34 and I have never booked anything with a travel agent. Now my mom still books her flights with a travel agent, but she lives in Costa Rica and her best friend is a travel agent. So it makes sense for her, but I never have. So I'm curious if you, Nick.
So, for the audience sake, we are attempting to record the video of this. So if you want to see how young Sean Mooney is, check us out on YouTube if we can get this posted up there correctly. And you will see Sean is a baby face. So, Sean,
you know, it's funny. I literally was having lunch the other day with a client, met him at a local, bar, and we were sitting there, and he's about, you know, in his late 50s. Now he's sitting there, and the bartender came over and carded me, and he was probably 28. The guy carded me. I said, "You're going to laugh when you see this." And I handed him my ID, and he broke out laughing. So I guess, you know.
Okay.
It is pretty common.
So 2 years ago, when you decided to be an agent, I'm just kidding. Let's back up a bit. How did you get into insurance? What was the route for you? What was the first step in, and then how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah. So I graduated college, looking for a job. I was an English major. No real direction. Yeah. So I got out and the first, one of the first conversations, someone said to me, "Oh, you're an English major. You're going to, teach English or you're going to wait tables. Which one do you think you want to do?" So it wound up that I started working at a State Farm agency shortly after college graduation and just kind of as a friend of a friend got into the situation. And that's kind of where my career started, with insurance.
So State Farm, what did you do when you were there?
Kind of a hybrid, doing some sales, along with some servicing, at a retail agency, close to home. So, it was 50-50 split between, servicing, existing clients and, with a little bit of a focus on, generating some new business and kind of, learning a little bit about insurance early on.
Was it love at first sight?
Was it love at first sight? No, not exactly. No. But it was something that I definitely could see myself long term with my career sticking with insurance because I think there's a lot of opportunities in this insurance in this industry. And, there's some stability there. So it was something that I gravitated towards, for those reasons, I think.
At least you were using your major every day. I mean, you were speaking to your customers in English.
That's right.
So wait, I can go to college and major, in the language that I speak every day just to speak it.
You can.
Oh,
and you
awesome.
Can really learn how to speak well.
So, Sean,
I always thought that insurance is a bit like the island of misfit toys. We take all the English majors, communication majors, philosophy majors, biology majors,
sure. Biology majors,
yeah. Biology majors, exactly. We have something here for everyone.
I actually knew a guy who went to law school and then right out of law school became an agent. So it's upon everything, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So, when did the turn occur? At what point in your career did you decide, this is for me and I want to excel and I want to get better and I want to improve and I want to make money? How did that kind of unfold?
So, really early on with State Farm, I knew that this was something that I could do, that I could see myself long term being successful in it. And Within the first 6 months, I kind of sized it up in terms of, hey, this is something I can really get behind. This is something I can sink my teeth into. And this is something, you know, I kind of want to, you know, be involved with long term. So that was early on in terms of my mind, in terms of what I was thinking. And so State Farm for 2 years, and then went to another agency with Allstate for about 8 years. And so at that point, in that move, in that decision, it was more into a sales position with the Allstate office, which allowed me to kind of, you know, build a little book of business and, you know, kind of grow and put my efforts behind more of a sales position, which I liked.
So from a sales perspective, how bad were you when you first started?
Terrible.
So, and the reason why I bring that up is because I think in most things that we do when we first start out, it is terrible, and you can only get good over time. And so how did you get good? How did you get better? How were you able to get homeowners to sign on the dotted line, auto buyers, auto insurers, to sign on the bottom line? What was the maturation process you had to go through?
Yeah. And I think that really kind of didn't come into, when I was working for Allstate, it was a little bit, I wasn't able to quite excel, I don't think, because it just wasn't the right place at the right time. And so when I opened up my agency in 2013, that's where I really started to kind of grow and develop and to implement some of the things that I've always wanted to do. And do it in the way that I wanted to do it. And, you know, again, at first it was ugly. There was a lot of no's and there was a lot of growth, initially. And, I really think it just comes down, for me at least. I always say I'm not the smartest guy and I'm not the best sales guy, but if you're willing to work hard and put the time in, that's kind of how it worked for me and how it clicked.
So what kind of things were you not able to do at Allstate that once you opened your own agency, you were able to try?
I don't think it was, working for someone else, you're working, within the parameters and within the guidelines that they kind of set forth for you. So in one part, it was the agency and, you know, what they kind of wanted us to do. And then in the other, it was Allstate and kind of how you could market under the, umbrella, Allstate umbrella. So, you know, you were kind of limited with those two governing bodies, you know, and then at this point now it's really, what do I want to do? You know, how do I want to attract customers? How can I grow this agency? And it's implementing the ideas that I want to do and kind of going at it, with 110%. So, okay. Wildly different, from my previous job.
So our generation, I'm assuming you're about my age since the bartender was surprised. So I'm assuming you're in your maybe early mid 30s. And so our generation has been kind of bombarded for since we were in high school, maybe even earlier, with constant ads from Geico and Progressive and nowadays the General and all sorts of other companies basically telling us that insurance is all about price. And it isn't. I'm sure you and I agree that it isn't about price, but how do you compete with that? How do you compete with $1 billion worth of Geico marketing every year, telling consumers that it's about price?
It's the David and Goliath that will be around forever. Marketing budgets, $1 billion plus. And it's what I call the commoditization of the insurance product. Consumers are hit over the head every single day. You turn the TV, it's, 15 minutes can save you 15%, and it's ingrained in people's heads that, it's driving consumers to that, buy a policy, save money, and that's it, So what I try to do is I obviously have to compete with price, I have to be price proximate on all of my products. And there's no getting around that. Am I going to sell a policy that's double what someone else may have? No, that's just not realistic. So I have to be competitive, with my pricing and my products. I think what people aren't understanding is that it's not about just the purchase. Okay, so getting a good price is about a purchase and saving some money. And that's fine. But there's more to it in terms of, buying a policy. There's a service aspect, that comes along with that, policy. There's a claims aspect that comes along, with that policy. And so what we try to do is really educate our clients, about their coverage, about their policies. It's a little bit of a different approach. We had one the other day and this was, we had a referral come in and it was a direct, they were, currently with a direct writer, a great company that's, based out of Texas. And, they have great, a great reputation. And he came to me and the client had a $1 million home, that he had insured with this carrier. And he had state minimum coverage on his auto policy. And I asked him, when he sent over his current policies, I said, has anyone reviewed your coverage with you at any time when you signed up with this direct carrier to, to make sure you had the proper coverage? And he was just, he didn't know what to say. He said, no, I signed up, got a good price. And, it's been in place for the last 3 years. And so, There's an opportunity there for education. So explaining, what a state minimum coverage limit is and where his gaps in coverage are, that's one example of kind of how we take it, a warm lead as a referral that comes in the office and, really try to explain, why he has that coverage and, how we can do better for him.
Okay. So in a case like that, where you find a glaring coverage gap, that's fantastic. But I'm wondering how do you get the ad back, right? Like when they throw you a softball like that, it's easy to hit it, but yep. how do we get the customer to even come in for that quote, right? Because unless they've had a bad claims experience or something like that, especially the younger customer, right? The younger customer that maybe has had a Geico policy since college. How do you bring them in? Is it mostly referrals
there's a lot of ways, right? So it's not one way that people are coming to me. You really have to be. You have to have a lot of those channels where business is coming in. And you've got to, kind of hit all of those different, targets. Referrals is definitely probably the largest for us. You know, we probably get 60 to 70% of our calls coming in for, you know, new business quotes is referrals. Starting from scratch, as our agency did, in 2013, it was my mindset that we had to offer people a level of service, that was far superior to anybody else, that would make them realize, what we were offering, and they would be inclined to share that with their friends and family and colleagues.
So a high level of service, in my mind, so you have somebody there by the phone, so 24 hours a day, and you've got an app and maybe an augmented reality or virtual reality experience for my Oculus Rift that I haven't bought yet, but I'm thinking of buying the next few weeks. So what
we have Mooney Inc. goggles.
That's what I was wondering. So what is that great service? How does that great service look like to the customer?
Yep. So let me illustrate this. A call comes into my office on a Saturday, a bad accident, right? The client doesn't necessarily, you know what to do and where to go, right? The ability for the client to call in and get a call back from the agent who sold them their policy within an hour to kind of get the claim set up and walk them through the next steps, you know, is a level of service that we offer, that we think speaks volumes about, you know, kind of what we do. You know, you buy your policy from 1-800-GENERAL, you know, you buy it from someone, you know, over the phone that you've never met in Kalamazoo. You call a claim in to, you know, the general 1-800-GENERAL, and they're in a call office and somewhere else, and they have no idea who you are and what your, what your needs are. And they really have no incentive to make sure you're taken care of. And it's a little bit different when my book is based around renewals and I have to do an outstanding job for you so that you're going to renew your policy. And if that means, you know, an email back on a Sunday night about your, you know, adding a kid, as a driver onto a policy, you know, it's any number of things. But it's that relationship, I think, that people don't get, when you're, you know, buying a policy, online. You know, what we say is we are your advocate, you know, we're your agency advocate.
What kind of market are you in? Are you in a small town or in a medium sized city or I don't really remember where you're based out of.
Yep. So we are in, just outside of Philadelphia in the suburbs. So we touch, a lot into the city, and have access to, a major metro area as in Philly. And then the, surrounding suburbs are pretty well populated. So it's not, you know, a rural town by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay. That's good to know that in a big city, people still care about kind of the personal touch.
I think some do, Tony, but I are there people that don't? Absolutely. Nick does.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, but Nick, you're an insurance professional. Like you understand the value of the agent. My big worry always is it seems that to the 30-year-olds and younger right now, it seems like they do not understand the value of an agent.
Yeah, I understand that. So Sean and I had dinner the other night, And I was expressing the same feelings you were, Tony. And Sean, you said something that really struck me, and I immediately shared it with Tony and Carly when I got to the airport that night. Sean said that there may not be, this might be the best time to be an agent. That with all this fear of doom and gloom, this might be the best time. Sean, why is it such a...
Hold on. This is the part of the show where I normally go, the best time to be an agent?
Sean, why is now... tell Tony, why is now the best time to be...
Hold on. For reference, I have some more mature friends who used to be Allstate agents. When they started, Allstate was owned by Sears, and basically all you had to do was sit at the Sears in the Sears store with your desk,
pick up the phone,
buy insurance from you. It wasn't even pick up the phone; they would come physically to you. They would go buy a fridge and then physically walk over to you and get insurance, and you own that book. So compared to then, it seems that being an agent right now is much more difficult. So why? How is it better today?
I guess it's how you look at it, right? So is it a terrible time for some people to be an agency owner? Absolutely. You know, if you've operated your agency the same way for the last 20 years and you're unable to make the changes that are needed to grow your agency today, it's the worst time to be an agency owner.
Like what kind of changes? Sean, explain what you do, what your agency does, that an agency that's been in business for 20 or 30 years would struggle to
or
do.
Or 80.
So we had a recent job. We were looking to hire a position in our office. And we posted the job on Facebook. And we've got 30 applicants within a week via Facebook. We are trying everything that we can do to leverage the technology that's out there, that's available to us, and really build in some efficiencies and use that technology to our advantage.
So let's go through that. As an example, do you advertise on Facebook?
Yes.
What's the benefit of that?
So one of the benefits is it's cheap. It's relatively inexpensive to put an ad on Facebook to get thousands and thousands of impressions. You know, you could do it for as little as like $20 a month to get thousands of impressions. So the cost effectiveness of doing it on Facebook right now is unbelievable. Is unbelievably underpriced for the value you're getting. And number two, Facebook ads, you can literally tell Facebook who you want to market against. So if you have a campaign to go out and drive business for boats, you can take 20 zip codes and you can do it based upon their likes, and you can find people that like boats and you can market directly to them. And I don't, you know, is there a more concise way to push a message to a target audience? I don't think so.
So Tony, I think that's where millennials potentially coming in and becoming agents have, from what I can tell, a very large advantage because technology is in their blood. Whereas all of these older agents, really are going to struggle to get a web presence, to get a social media presence, to market on social media in a way that a younger person can come in and actually reach the audience. So it's in that regard, it's kind of an unfair fight.
But when the older agent buys their Yellow Page ad, my guess is that the Yellow Pages probably offers them the ability of build an Insta website to augment the ad. So I don't know, Facebook versus free website that comes with your Yellow Page listing. No, I do hear that advertising on Facebook is so granular.
So, go ahead, John.
So let's remove insurance from the conversation, okay? Let's take it as you're opening a shoe store, you know, a retail operation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a kid that is versed in these technologies from a marketing standpoint, you know, you're way better off. You have so much more going for you to sell shoes than Joe Smith, the shoe guy that's been down the street for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
But how do you compete with Zappos, you know, when it comes to selling shoes online? Or how do you compete with Amazon when it comes to selling books online or just about anything online?
Yeah.
That's really hard.
Yep. Well, is it hard or is it better? Because again, Zappos is hitting like a bazillion people, right? So there's nothing unique to their marketing, right? The great ability for someone like me with an agency, you know, as small as I am, is I can pick who I want to market to. And I can really zero in on people that are looking for my products locally and really, you know, create a marketing plan around that and, you know, be concise with it.
Sean, tell the audience and Tony what you told me over dinner about your Waze advertising.
So you just brought up another point in terms of the billboard, right? Years ago, you'd put your face, splash it on a billboard, and people would drive down the highway and, you know, hey, there's Jim Smith, the insurance guy, right? I just recently saw that Waze started allowing businesses to, you know, pay for advertising. So I basically went on, created my profile for my agency and signed up with Waze to do, you know, paid advertising with them. And so every time that someone drives down the street from my office, literally, they're getting hit, and there's a ping there that when they drive by, oh, there's Sean Mooney, the insurance guy, Mooney Insurance Brokers, right on their Waze with a big logo, and it's hitting them.
Are people walking in and telling you, oh, I saw you on Waze? Not yet?
Nope.
I don't like the idea.
Tony, if you think there's a one-for-one marketing dollar for what you're getting back, that's not marketing, you know? You have to push it out in so many different directions that over time, it's going to create, you know, someone might drive past my office four different times on Waze, and then the fifth time, their policy renews, and they get a rate increase, and they're like, oh, mm-hmm. Oh, wait, remember that guy? You know, and it clicks. I had a guy that called me. I sent postcards out to zip codes locally. And I did it for, you know, a period of time. And a guy literally called me and he said, called in for a quote. And I said, where did you get our name from? And he said, oh, those postcards you sent out. I said, we didn't send postcards out like that was like a year ago. And he goes, yeah, I put it in my desk and I was holding on to it because I knew when my policies renewed, I wanted to talk to you.
Well, that's good.
You know what I mean? So it's if you throw it out there enough and, you know, it's not that instant thing where you're going to push it out and get that instant, immediate, you know, callback. It's just hitting those channels, hitting enough variety of channels, and over time, you know, you hope that it pays dividends.
So I'm in the commercial line side nowadays, and I don't deal with commissions in general as an underwriter. What are the carriers paying? Is it still the good old 15% commission on personal lines, or what are you seeing for the most part in personal lines?
Yeah, it's changing, personal and commercial. Typically, personal lines on an independent side is generally like 12 to 15, typically. Okay.
So there seems to be a lot of effort in Silicon Valley, a lot of insurtech companies that are trying to disintermediate the agency, which is, again, this is what Geico and Progressive have been trying to do for years. How do you feel about the future? Let's say 10 years from now, what do you think the agency world looks like 10 years from now?
I think it's a lot different. I don't think insurance will be purchased the same way, and there's a lot of factors that are going to change the way it's done. But I still think it's 10 years from now, I still think it's going to look very similar to the way it is now. I just don't know if the distribution will be the same. I think there will be a lot less agencies. I think that a lot will be acquired over the next 10 years. So I think you'll have a lot of the behemoths that own a greater share of the distribution. But I still think it's, from our standpoint, that it's still going to be a viable, the agency model is still going to be viable in 10 years.
Okay, I get it. Okay, so basically, you're playing the same game as most of the startups. You're trying to build something that Gallagher will want to buy in a few years.
That's not what I want to do. But there's definitely a trend going that way. There's no question about it. Locally, around here, you know, I could give you 4 or 5. Very well-established agencies that have recently sold to top 20 PNC brokers nationally. So I think that consolidation will continue. It's not something that in my foreseeable future I'm looking to do, but it's going to happen for sure.
So how do you compete with those shops? You know, when the top agencies in Philadelphia get bought out by I don't know, what are the guys out of Utah? I can't think of their name right now. Well, get bought out by big national names. Levitt, the one. When one of the guys gets bought out by Levitt and the other one by Gallagher and the other one by Aon, how does Mooney Insurance compete with those kind of resources? From big national players.
So you think it, I guess, and not you, but some people may look at that as like a disadvantage. Like, how do you compete with that? I almost look at it like it's opportunity, because, you know, the agency that they dealt with for 20 years or 10 years or 3 years, and the policy they bought that, the policy they purchased, from Jane Smith 3 years ago is no longer around. And you know, as these agencies start collapsing, you know, so is the attention to the client. Quite honestly, I don't think that they can offer a level of service that I'm able to give, quite honestly.
That's fair. Okay, Nick, I feel like I haven't let you get a word in edgewise. What questions do you have, or what comments do you have for
well, Sean? I think this is a good opportunity for us to take a break. For Profiles in Risk, this will be our first sponsor break. So let's take a sponsor break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll ask Sean a few more questions about agencies. So let's take a short break.
Sounds good.
Hi, everyone. You know those signs you occasionally see on the highway that say, advertise here? Well, that's what this spot is for. We are seeking sponsors for Profiles in Risk. If you are a company looking to connect, advertise, or reach thousands of dedicated and eager insurance professionals, then please consider sponsoring Profiles in Risk. For your sponsorship, you will receive a 15 to 30 second promotion in the middle of the podcast, along with a thank you message on the intro and at the ending of the podcast. We will also carry your logo on each marketing communication for that podcast. If you are interested in sponsoring Profiles in Risk, please visit our Contact Us page at www.insnerds.com. Thank you.
And welcome back to Profiles in Risk. We are speaking with Sean Mooney of Mooney Insurance, just outside of Philadelphia. And Sean, I notice for the video, you are wearing your Philadelphia Eagles jersey. Can you stand up?
I am.
Can you stand up? I can't see the number. Who is 20?
20 is my all-time favorite Philadelphia Eagle, Brian Dawkins.
I lived in Philly for a little while, and I can say there's nothing quite like a Philadelphia fan, especially an Eagles fan. They're pretty rabid. It's like a religion. There aren't too many. The closest thing I would say that I've seen that's kind of like that would be like the Red Sox fans before the Red Sox started winning World Series. It was, you know, just a religion. It was part of the fabric of society.
So wait, did they lose their religion once they won? Is that what happened?
It's not the same. And I have to warn you, I think once the Eagles finally do break whatever curse, whatever Billy Goat or the selling of baby.
It was William Penn.
It was the William Penn curse?
Yeah. Because forever, when they put when they erected Billy Penn or changed him.
You mean City Hall? The statue?
Yeah. And then so no building could be taller than Billy Penn or something like to that effect. And so once they did, that was the end.
So that's the curse. Okay. Well, I'm telling you now, once the curse is over and they move that statue, it's not going to be the same. It just...
Yeah, it was when the Phillies won in what year was that? 2008. That winning was like for Philadelphia was really, really big, but not anywhere near what it would be for the Eagles.
Yeah, completely. I completely understand that. So well. Good luck on the season. Anyone that's watching the video, though, can see that the real team is right there where my fingers are. 87, Rob Gronkowski, greatest tight end ever, greatest dancer ever. I don't.
I'll give you a dancer.
Did you see him at the White House last week?
I did.
Interrupting the press secretary. That takes a lot of guts. So.
Okay. Gronk being Gronk, right?
Gronk's
world.
Gronk being Gronk. So let's get back into insurance. And I had a couple of questions as we were coming into break. And specifically, I was wondering, what's a common misconception that the general public has about agents that you have to manipulate and have to work against?
Misconceptions about agencies. I think people in general just think that, you know, insurance people are, you know,
rich,
stuffy, rich, you know, people that are, okay, no personality.
Let me help you here. Do you have a half a day on Wednesdays?
No.
Do you leave work early to go golfing?
No.
Are you rich?
No.
Do you care about your customers?
I do.
There you go. Okay. So I think when I started in the insurance industry, I was an agent, and those were common misconceptions, was that agents, they work banker's hours, they're constantly taking their clients out to golf. They're the little character in Monopoly. You know, rich guy.
Well, have you ever seen the meme online? It's like, you know, what do you do? What does your wife think you do? What does your clients think you do? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's similar to that, right? Is like, oh, well, you're an insurance guy and you're playing golf every day and you're not really working that hard. And, you know, my situation is probably a little different because I'm, you know, relatively newer. So for me, it's grind, 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 go, go, go. I actually said to the woman in the office the other day, I said, I can't remember the last time that I had a sit down dinner with my family on a weekday. I guess there's a misconception there that there's a lifestyle attached or you know, something along those lines. But
okay.
I guess there's some out there that, you know, are like that, but certainly some that are not.
So
I got to say, for attracting millennials into the industry, you're not convincing me that if I were brand new right out of school looking to go into insurance because INS Nerds told me it was a great career, at this point I would be going carrier because – the agency looks like a really hard job.
Okay, so perfect segue. Why should a millennial care? So someone that's young, Sean, you know, coming out of school, what benefits do you think being an agent provides that someone that's, you know, a millennial with, you know, their characteristics about life, what would attract them? To you know, which segment of the millennial population would be attracted to what you do every day and why?
So I think there's a couple ways you can go with this. Is that, you know, are we talking about a millennial that has entrepreneurial tendencies and someone that, you know, wants to get into a business where they can get right in and, you know, and start a business, grow a business, and kind of, you know, build it on their own. I think speaking to a millennial that is interested in being an entrepreneur, I think that, you know, it's a great segue in regards to that type of personality or millennial or you know,
well,
that type of person.
What about millennials that want to make a difference in the world? What would you say
to them? Don't do insurance.
Do you really don't do insurance?
Yeah. So millennials that don't have those, you know, entrepreneurial desires, you know, they could go work for a Gallagher, you know, as Tony had said.
You mean don't be an independent agent?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, if you want to go the other. Yeah. Yeah.
Because what you're saying is that if your prime goal is to make a big difference in the world, it's probably not going to be enough. It's just not going to be enough for them to cut it as an independent agent because you need to have more of an entrepreneurial feel for business to want to jump into something like that.
Yeah, because it's sacrifice. You know, so if you don't have that entrepreneurial will, you know, it's probably not for you.
It's hard to sit across from someone that is complaining about $50 on their auto insurance. And, you know, if your goal is to save the world and you're sitting there, there's a salesmanship that's required for you to keep that policy. And I don't disagree with you. I think the mission of doing good in the world comes from the claim side. You know, that's probably where you get your biggest satisfaction in your job, I would presume.
Yes and no. You know, and then when a claim goes south and I'm able to step in and take the reins and contact a sales manager and get things done and be, you know, and really be the glue to make it come together. I mean, that's, for me, that's part of my job. It's part of what I enjoy.
What's the hairiest or most satisfying claim you've ever had to get personally involved in?
There was one time where there was fatalities involved, and it was really, really not a good situation. That just kind of sticks out in my mind as being one of the worst ones that I had to deal with. There was another one when I was working with Allstate, and a client of mine called in on I guess it was Saturday evening. It was after one of our major storms. And so I got into the office Monday morning, picked up the voicemail at, you know, 8:50 a.m. And it was bad. It was like, you know, an area that was hit hard. You know, a tree basically took out, you know, half of their house. And it was a woman that had moved to our area. And I was at her house on location before 9:30, making calls to the claims people. And I remember PICO was there, which is the energy company. The police were there. Fire was there because there was telephone lines down. It was chaos. And, you know, to show up and to be on site when a client is in that type of situation, it's for them. You know, there's no better feeling. You know, and as we're walking through, I remember, you know, the police, police officer, you know, looked to the client and was like, "Who's this guy? You know, who's this?" And she said, "Oh, this is my insurance agent." And he was just like blown away, like, you know, that he didn't even know how to respond to it. So that's another one that might stick out. And I had to be heavily involved with that type of claim because it was after one of the storms where, you know, claims, they were third partying out a lot of their claims. So there was, you know, multiple different parts to the claims managers. So to be able to get myself involved in the claim and help them out, I mean, that's, you know, to me, that's part of what I do and part of what I love.
So just I would suspect that that's just immensely satisfying. But I also suspect that, you know, trying to connect this back to millennials that are coming in, you know, that is the social mission. And this is what Tony and Carly and I talk about all the time, is that the product of insurance is the claim, is when something bad happens, that there's someone to be there for you. And I would suspect that that person will be a client for life.
Yeah. I mean, you buy a policy, you're not buying a tangible good, you know, you're buying something that when something goes bad, you know, you're there to put the pieces back together. You know, that's what an insurance policy is. So when you really step up to the plate, when it's time, you know, when that bell rings, you want to deliver for your client. And so I, you know, let's go back to the millennial and why the millennial gets involved and what their, you know, what their, you know, why they want to be involved in, you know, as part of an agency. You know, I think there's a lot of ways you can go with that. You know, if you want a profession that is able to, deliver on those types of things, I think that's part of it.
So when you are looking to hire, what types of things are you looking for?
I think nowadays it's almost a must, for me at least, that you be somewhat, tech savvy. You know, you have to be able to talk the language of your clients, and, you know, you have to give the client that experience that they're looking for. And, you know, if it's, you know, a strictly, some people just prefer a phone, and they want to deal with someone on the phone. Some people like in person, you know, some people nowadays just like to text. And so, someone has to have the skills to kind of hit all of those types of, communications for our clients.
Understood. Tony, did you have a question? Okay.
Yes.
If you don't, I have a couple more.
Go ahead with yours.
Okay. So, I'm assuming a lot of your new hires aren't well versed in insurance. How do you train them? How do you get, what is your, typical route to get someone has not been in insurance to get them up to speed with what they're going to be faced day to day in insurance?
Yeah. So, a lot of it is based around, initially it's licensing, right? So if you don't have the background and you're not licensed, a lot of it is getting that person, just through the process of getting licensed. And so that would be kind of the first part of it. And then from there, it's, you know, learning the specific, different carrier sites, because every carrier is different, in terms of their technology and, you know, what type of sites that they use. And then, you know, it's a plethora of, our agency management systems, you know, and then some of the other, supplemental, technologies that we would use, like just getting, you know, e-signatures or stuff like that. So it really is, you really have to be pretty good and pretty versed, with those technologies.
So are you,
and, you know, millennials, it's like second nature. So they do have a leg up on a lot of other people, because if you insert them into the agency, I mean, their ability to, pick that stuff up, I mean, is worlds quicker than someone that's not.
So another advantage for millennials going into the agency system is that they'd pick it up quickly. They could advance rapidly. They could be successful more quickly than they could in other types of office environments.
That is one thing that, that's a big selling point. It's hard to grow, fast in the career side. On the other hand, I've got several, friends, that I've met through the CPC Society that have vice president level titles at agencies. And I'm not 100% sure how much of a, you know, what that actually means, but it's been a lot easier. It's taken them a lot less years to get there than my friends who are carrier side vice presidents. So I can definitely see that advantage. I do wonder though, if I were graduating college today, or if my little sister were graduating college today and looking for an insurance job, and she wanted to be on the agency side, I strongly lean towards going to a big commercial type, brokerage rather than a personal line. So I was wondering, why didn't you do that? You like the insurance agency side. Why not go and focus on commercial lines, which appears to me
for me or for me, like personally, or for someone that's, you know, graduating recently?
Both. It could be a two-part answer.
Yeah. So for me, it was the entrepreneurial side, right? So I wanted to build something. I wanted to create it. I wanted to do it my way. And really, that's, for me, you know, that's not available on the carrier side. So
Yeah.
So that's for me. So to the other person that's a recent graduate, why would they go to an agency as opposed to a carrier? You know, I'm not going to be the person to sit here and say they shouldn't go to the carrier side and you know, and do well and prosper through the you know, that channel. I mean, there's opportunity for growth, and you can make a great living with a great company. And, you know, I'm not here to convince that person not, but what I will say is that, it's going to be a lot more rigid, in terms of what the carrier is going to do, how you're going to be able to market. So, you know, you may want to go out and do social media, events, and you might want to do, you know, different things to promote the agency or a product or drive sales. And, you know, the carrier might said, nope, we can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. We don't do that here.
Definitely. That happens a lot.
So if you get into the right agency that has an agency owner that allows you to take your ideas in and to utilize, you know, everything that you're bringing to the table, and you want to promote that person's ideas and, you know, kind of get behind that person. I mean, that's, you know, that's one of the benefits of working with, you know, an agency as opposed to being on the carrier side. You know, you have to conform. You have to conform to the commercial brokerage, you know, the Aon, the Gallagher. You know, it's what they want to do and how they want to do it.
That's their way, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a lot different in terms of going to work for an agency and really presenting a business plan and putting that in front of the agency owner and saying, hey, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to do it. And this is what I think we can accomplish by doing it. And having an agency owner get behind that and support that idea. I mean, I don't know if you'll find that in the on the carrier side. Not carrier side, but, you know, the big commercial broker. You might, but you might not.
Well, I think that's a fitting way to market to millennials and get them interested in agents. So we're getting close to the end of the show, and we generally try to end each show on a positive note, Sean. So we go around the horn and we talk about something that happened to you this past week that you're extremely happy about or proud about. So I'll tee it up for Tony first, so you can get a flavor of what this looks like, and then we'll go over to you, Sean.
Well, normally we go ladies first, and Carly goes first. So I am very proud that I was the closest thing to a lady today. I think I'm pretty close to my feminine side. In college absence, I'll go first. This has been an amazing, though exhausting week, but amazing nonetheless. I went on my yearly pilgrimage, or it's actually every 6 months pilgrimage to a national CBCU event. In the fall, it's the annual meeting, which is usually about 4,000 people. In the spring, it's the leadership summit, which is about 400 people, a little bit less than 400. So this was the CBCU Society 2017 Leadership Summit in where the heck was I? Maryland, in Baltimore, Maryland, where I had never been before. So I checked off a state, and this is maybe my 10th national CPCU event. So at this point, I know a lot of people, but usually I spend most of my time going around and saying, "Hey, my name is Tony. I run this blog called INS Nerds. Let me tell you about it." This time, about a third of the people already knew about the blog, which was a big win. And a whole bunch of people came over and said, "We love the podcast." And I found out that the podcast is very popular with a different population, with a higher level, more mature population that maybe doesn't have time to read the blog every week, but they have commutes and they have flights, travel time, and they're very, very excited about the podcast. So that was amazing to find out. And also on Wednesday, we announced, pre-released our book, which is called Insuring Tomorrow. And it is published by INS Nerds, and it's written by myself and Carly. And so it is now available for pre-order, both on our website and directly on Amazon, Insuring Tomorrow. If you want, it's all about how to engage millennials in the industry. Carly and I have spent 5 years on the topic. If you want to pre-order the Kindle edition, you can pre-order today. If you want the paperback or Dead Trees edition, that's not available for pre-order. So it'll be available on June 5th when both versions ship.
Link it up.
So I will definitely include the link in the show notes. So we are very, very proud to get to the point where we're ready to offer that. And it was really awesome at Leadership Summit that so many people were excited about INS Nerds, and I felt like a celebrity. I mean, I couldn't buy myself a drink the whole, I slept like 4 hours a night, and I couldn't get close to a bar in the hotel without somebody buying me a drink. It was crazy. It was like being a rock star. And by the way, Nick, they are clamoring for you to make an appearance next year, or at the annual meeting in Orlando, in September of this year. So anyway, that's good for me.
Can I wear my Gronk shirt?
You can wear whatever you want.
Awesome.
Hopefully with an INS Nerds pin.
Sure. Sure. You guys did great this week. You blew up Twitter. So,
thank you.
Kudos. Congratulations on the pre-release of the book. I'm sure it's going to do, really well. Sean, what pause, besides having dinner with me, what's something that,
that was great. That was, you actually stole my thunder, because that was going to be, how I ended things, as a positive, uplifting, last, statement.
And being,
so let me ask Tony with his book, what's the focus? Are you doing it with a focus on millennials because that's kind of your peer group? Or is there something else behind the focus on the millennials?
So the reason we chose that topic is because the industry is really struggling, both in the carrier and the agency side, with how to retain millennials. We do pretty well at bringing them in, and we do pretty bad at keeping them here. And it's a problem that I've been hearing about ever since I got into the industry, and surprisingly, nobody had written a book on how to fix it. So we went out and we read everything there is on millennials that we could find, and a bunch of academic studies specifically about millennials and insurance, and we kind of applied it all together. And again, we're not, you know, demographic experts. We're true insurance professionals applying these concepts to the reality of the industry. And we also, it also has a chapter on the generation after the millennials, the Gen Z. So we're also introducing the industry to what's coming our way, in the next few years after, with the next generation.
Cool.
Yep.
And you pretty much didn't answer Nick's question about what you're excited about this week.
He did.
Besides dinner, I think you'll both get a kick out of this. I did have a 20 year high school reunion.
Wait, I thought you were still in high school.
Yeah, that is
20. 20.
That is very impressive to know that you graduated high school at only 4 years old. That is quite amazing.
Advanced, very advanced, Tony.
Well, exactly.
Congratulations on that, Sean. My piece of news is more than a week late, but since I wasn't on the show last week, since I played Wally Pip last week, somehow I got back, but I was a co-author on a flood paper published by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, the NAIC. It was their research group on flood, and I got a very good response on that. And I'm very proud of that because, for one thing, we put tens of hours of time into that paper. And for another, we get to be co-authors with professors from Wharton and other insurance professionals. And I feel like we're slowly changing the paradigm of what flood is, what flood insurance is, what flood insurance isn't, where it needs to go. We're opening up that discussion, and a lot of the things that I wrote about in the paper I've seen now come up over and over. So my proud point of the week. So
can I give you my most interesting flood claim?
Sure.
One of my insureds sustained water damage in their home because a tree fell on the neighbor's above ground pool and the whole entire pool dumped into my insured's house.
That's a nice one. That's an interesting one.
Now,
yeah, we get to see it all.
Flood is not covered, but I would suspect that a tree falling on a pool on someone else's policy would be grounds for
liability.
Some kind of liability. No. What happened?
Flood exclusion.
But wouldn't the homeowner just sue the neighbor then?
Good.
That's the way I take it.
Yeah.
Go where the deep pockets are. Insurance, right? Golf.
Yep.
Golf every day, half days on Wednesdays. Okay. Well, we've come to the end of the show. Tony, quickly, how can our audience get a hold of that poster?
Oh, okay. So if you're watching on video, and even if you're not, we'll put a picture of the poster up on the show notes. Now that we're doing this on video, or optional, you can listen to the iTunes too. But now that we're doing it on video, I will have a poster behind me every week. And whoever comments and leaves us a review on iTunes gets entered into a drawing to take it home. I'll autograph it if they want it autographed, and you can have it the way it is otherwise.
Awesome.
So the poster of the week giveaway from INS Nerds. To make this even more fun for all of our listeners and viewers,
and all they have to do is rate us or do a review.
Do a review on iTunes.
Okay.
I'll warn you.
Okay, do a review.
iTunes doesn't tell me.
And someone's going to win that awesome poster. I love it. Great idea.
Nick, you can sign the Grant jersey. Give that away.
No way.
That's a thought.
Maybe when we get rich and I'm taking half days off on Wednesday to, go golfing. Okay. Well, that's a good way to wrap up the show. Sean, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Tony as well. Thank you. So for Sean Mooney and Tony Kindness, my name is Nick Lamparelli, and we'll see you next week.